Hello, and welcome to the End Credits Radio Show here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I am your host, Adam A. Donaldson, and joining me today is...
Candace LePage.
Vince Masson.
And Peter Salmon.
And, I mean, we came so very close to having everyone in the same quarters, but unfortunately, Tim Phillips couldn't be here when we wanted the whole gang together at Christmas time.
I've never even met these people.
Yeah, this is our Christmas movie.
Yeah. Well, you did the Christmas show with Tim.
Yes.
Or not,
with Vince.
Vincent.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, it's true. That was the first time we met.
Okay, so just Peter. Anyway. So yeah, Tim couldn't be here. We didn't want the whole gang together. We do send our regards and holiday wishes to Tim. He is a working filmmaker, so you know, his time is sometimes more valuable than others, and we wish him well. As of for the show here, End Credits, local movie show for local movie fans, we are here every Thursday at 10 a.m. to talk the latest and review the newest movies here. This week, though, we are trapped between Christmas and New Year's, like some kind of phantom zone. So we did the thing that movie lovers do this time every year, which is make a list of our favorite best films of the year, favorite films, best films. We didn't really lay down precise criteria for this. I did what I thought the best ones were of the year. I assume we all did. But Candace, since we adhere to a strict ladies first rule on End Credits, why don't you start us off with your number five?
All right. Unfortunately, my number five, I feel like it should be much higher, but it was a year of really, like, big, loud films. So, The Big Sick is my number five.
Mm-hmm.
I want it to be higher, and for some reason, I just, I couldn't get it up there any higher. But, I don't know, this film was so nice. It was just nice. Like,
I hear you.
I am not a romantic comedy fan. You know, it's not really high on my list of films to watch. But,
so what exactly is the premise of the movie? I don't think I've fully discovered what.
Yeah. So Kumail Nanjiani, mm-hmm. and his wife, Emily Gordon, have made this movie. They've written the script. It's loosely, well, actually it's pretty closely based, but it's based on how they met and fell in love and got married, except that they've sort of changed a couple of the details. But Kumail Nanjiani is just a comic. He meets this girl in a bar who is Emily. They start seeing each other. His family is very... Muslim, and they want to
Pakistan. Yeah,
they want to arrange a marriage for him, all of that. His other brother, I think, was sort of disowned because he married a white woman, and so he doesn't really want to choose this white girl. And then she gets very sick, and so then he has to realize, oh, I actually do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good synopsis. That's a great pick. Vince, how about you? Number five.
Well, my number five is about two men going into the jungle and losing their minds. It's actually not a Werner Herzog project. It's actually James Gray's wonderful The Lost City of Z, which actually didn't do too well at the box office, I think, for several reasons. One of the reasons, I think, is the title. The Lost City of Z just kind of conjures up this image of this Indiana Jones-esque, I don't know, crusade, if you will. But it's actually like a beautiful drama character study about these two adventures in the truest sense of the word. These guys were, and two wonderful performances by Robert Pattinson and Charlie Hunnam, playing Percy Fawcett, this guy who in 1925 went missing in the Amazon jungle trying to find this city that he, you know, was adamant existed. But James Gray is a very interesting director. He did The Immigrant, I believe, a couple years ago. He loves, you know, these beautifully shot kind of films, and that's what this is. And, you know, and then World War One kind of breaks out halfway through, and it turns into, there's this like incredible like World War One sequence. It's just a fantastic movie.
Great.
That people should seek out.
Okay. Peter, you?
All right. My fifth one is, I'm not a huge blockbuster guy. So fifth is Spider-Man Homecoming. Probably my favorite MCU film thus far. I'm a huge Spider-Man guy. But I've got a little man crush on Tobey Maguire, I'm not going to lie. So I was hesitant. I was very hesitant. But going in, it was different enough. Tom Holland was excellent at portraying a younger Spider-Man. They didn't have to deal with all the how did he become Spider-Man. A lot more jokes. I thought seeing Martin Starr and other like just true comedians in it was fantastic. Yeah, the villain was great. Yeah. It was just all around everything I expected and wanted from a Spider-Man film.
That's great. And I will see your Spider-Man and add you a Wolverine, because my number five is Logan. And it was really great because we were talking last week about the Disney-Fox merger and how, you know, a film like this is probably going to be harder to make under Disney because... Fox clearly was willing to take a bit more chances, and Logan was a chance that really paid off. It's interesting to watch as an X-Men fan or as a comic book fan and get one of these kind of what-if stories, because that's kind of how it's very much set up. Hugh Jackman's final time playing Wolverine, you know, it'll be interesting to see going forward how other franchises deal with that. He's been Wolverine for 17 years, and, you know, there are other actors who, you know, I'm thinking maybe particularly of Robert Downey Jr. In Iron Man, who, you know, he's almost 10 years since he's been playing that, so he may wish to retire from that in the near future. So it'd be interesting how comic movies handle this, but I think the way Logan handled it was really beautiful. It was a touching drama. It played into the X-Men mythos, but at the same time, you didn't need to know much about the X-Men mythos to enjoy it. Great supporting performance by Patrick Stewart as Professor X, and, you know, they managed to say something about, you know, getting old and dementia, and but doing it with, you know, with the mutant umbrella that, you know, you can tell these stories with. And then Hugh Jackman, great final performance. Daphne Keene, who plays like the young Wolverine clone who he's trying to protect. She was such a great find. She spends most of the movie mute, but she manages to do so much as an actor without saying much. And, you know, spoiler, I will say that because the end scene is where you kind of you manage to hold out till the very end when Wolverine dies, and all the kids, the mutant kids, bury him, and Daphne Keene, her character's Laura, she quotes the movie Shane as over his grave, and the grave marker is a cross. But before all the kids leave to go to exit the stage, one of the kids stays behind and turns the cross over to an X, and it fades out on the X.
Nice. Perfect.
And it's, yeah, it is perfect. It's such a beautiful ending. I know there's some. There's always a possibility that Hugh Jackman could be persuaded in some way, but I mean, I hope not, because this was a really poignant ending to something that the X-Men movies have had their ups and downs. But I think one of the constants through the whole thing has been Hugh Jackman, who's just always been so personable and managed to just ingrain himself in the part so much, and it was a really great ending for him. So that's Logan. Candace, number four.
Number four is a super recent movie. I'm pretty sure everybody's seen it. Thor Ragnarok.
Nope.
Didn't mean everybody in this room necessarily.
Okay, good.
Vince has been too busy raiding the 90s for t-shirts. He's wearing a Ninja Turtle shirt, which looks...
It's pretty great.
It looks crisp from Byway in 1991. It's...
I don't know what to say to that.
So, Thor Ragnarok. I mean, they took a pretty serious risk, I think, in hiring Taika Waititi to direct this. I mean, what's this guy done? A couple of, like, films?
Yeah, What We Do in the Shadows.
I know, and I love that film. But did he even get, like, a wide release? Most people, I think, have never even heard of it.
Yeah, no,
still.
I had to go to the bookshelf to see it.
Yeah, so. That's where I saw it as well. So they took a risk in a really sort of not well-known director, with a really peculiar style, and let him do it. And, you know, he just made this really great film that was so fun and introduced new characters that I want to see more of forever and ever and ever. And it just, I don't know, you know, in our political climate, it was kind of nice to just go see like a ridiculous, you know, superheroes, giant swords and not hammers.
What political climate? Everything is fine right now. I don't understand.
Says the guy in the Party Down Ninja Turtle shirt. speaking of which, Vince, what's your number four?
Well, my number four is actually a movie that I was kind of indifferent about when they announced it. It's Denis Villeneuve's Blade Runner 2049. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons is because I think it became this really like glib thing about the return of Harrison Ford, and all the trailers are, here's Harrison Ford, you know, coming stealthily out of the shadows and whatever.
Yeah.
But it's actually like an incredibly powerful science fiction film. Like, I could not believe how much fun I had at this movie. And I think this is Roger Deakins' year. He will probably get the statue for the cinematography on this movie.
Can't they finally give him a statue for something?
Yeah.
It's about time.
Yeah.
It is about time.
The statue for the most nominations at this point.
The statue for the most times he's been outdone by Emmanuel Lubezki. I think Blade Runner 2049 is probably my top 10, not necessarily my top 5, but it's you're right about Harrison Ford. They sort of make it about Harrison Ford in the ads, but I think he doesn't show up till like after the second hour.
Yeah, and you know, you might think I'm being biased because I look so much like Ryan Gosling, but the movie is actually like incredible, and Ryan Gosling's performance is very kind of quiet and subtle, but you know, he does have his kind of tone there. I don't know.
Yeah, and that's his style. He's a subtle man.
Yeah.
Peter, number four.
Number four, probably Logan Lucky. Definitely the most underrated of the year, like by far. Daniel Craig, a perfect film for him to do right after James Bond.
He was very good.
It was just so much better than I expected. I expected just to be like a regular, you know, they steal some stuff, just a regular thriller film. But you can get really deep into the characters. You can relate to them. There's some true comedy, some interesting turn of events. It's just all around. It's just really good. And a really perfect representation of what Steven Soderbergh can do great. Especially, I think this was his first film in a while, right? Didn't he come back?
Since, what did he do before Behind? He did Behind the Candelabra, but that's technically HBO. But
and then there was the thriller with Channing Tatum and Rooney Mara.
That's right.
Side effects,
that's right.
But I also really admire how he like distributed this as well, how he's kind of not thumbing his nose, but he's going his own kind of route with the distribution of his films now, and he's not relying so much on these big studios to kind of push his film.
Which gives him more control, too.
Yeah.
What he wants to do.
Worth noting, he was in retirement before.
that lasted all of,
Okay, my number four actually is The Big Sick. I put number four on The Big Sick there. I agree with everything Candace said. It is a completely unconventional romantic comedy in that the leading lady is largely absent from the falling in love part. She doesn't realize her absence makes him realize he's falling in love with her. And yes, it's based on a real life turn of events, of course, but I mean, it's still bold as sort of a narrative direction. And Camille Nanjiani so great in it, Zoe Kazan so great in it, and then us as her parents, Holly Hunter and Ray Romano steal the show.
Definitely steals the show.
Ray Romano stole it for me.
But yeah, it's great. I thought the whole cast was great. There's a lot of other comedians who have sort of small roles. It's the people he's hanging out with at the comedy club, and it's very unconventional. Not only was this like a hard year for comedies, I feel like anytime it's a hard time for romantic comedies. It's very hard to like do something that's really unique and original with a romantic comedy, and this managed to do that. And it managed to be touching in unexpected ways. It was dropped at hilarious. I still laugh at that line where they're in the cafeteria and Ray Romano asks him, like, how do you feel about 9/11? And he's like, oh, it was a tragedy. We lost a lot of good guys that day. And
there are so many jokes. I wasn't sure if I was able to laugh at. It was great.
It was like watching that in the bookshelf the house was mostly half full, but it was like a cork went off and it was like a bottle of champagne exploded just to let off that tension, because it could have, you know, gone in some any number of directions. Mm-hmm. But for that like deadpan line, it was perfect. And it's tender, it's sweet, but it's also very honest, and I enjoyed it immensely. So that brings us to numero trois.
Three. My third film of the year is It. I mean, I did a whole episode about it, so we don't have to go too far into it. But I loved it. The book meant a lot to me. The original miniseries meant a lot to me. It could have gone so wrong, you know, when you go in with so many expectations when it's something you love so much. And it actually delivered a really good film that was scary, but also just, again, really touching. Like,
you can relate to the characters?
Yeah, the kids. It was just so surprising how kind of heartwarming them learning to be friends and how to relate to each other and how to stand up for themselves. It was a really, really great film. It was well done.
I still laugh at The Right Stuff.
Oh, yes.
She finds the new kid's poster behind his door. It's hilarious. I would agree. It was really well done. I'm not a big Stephen King fan, but it made me a fan of that story. And I think a lot of really smart decisions were made, not the least of which was to focus on the kids and find a great group of kids to build the movie around and make them the focus and not so much the scary clown, because the scary clown will take care of himself. And if I can add, which Skarsgård was it that played Pennywise?
Bill
Skarsgård. Yeah, he was a real find. I don't know what kind of prep he did to play Pennywise, but he is...
a lot of standing in front of the mirror.
Yeah.
I think he is my favorite Skarsgård because of that now. It's a tough race, but I think he's pulled ahead.
The movie was not about an IT team, like, as
is that what you were expecting?
Yeah. It was, like, written in blood. I was expecting to see something very, like, thrilling about, you know, like...
You're expecting, like, Steve Jobs, but with murder?
Yeah, yeah. It was about a killer clown, as it turns out. Crazy.
Not a killer app.
Damn.
Oh. Yikes.
Vince, number three. You have to...
Okay, well, my number three was a movie that I saw at TIFF, actually.
This guy with the TIFF.
Yeah. unfortunately, I gotta include that, you know, experience among the great films that I saw this year. So it was directed by a director who's quickly becoming one of my favorite directors, actually. And he came out after the screening of this film, and he said, I take my inspiration for my scripts from real life. And an audience member was like, where did you get the inspiration for this film? To which he kind of had a very hazy reply. The film is Yorgos Lanthimos, The Killing of a Sacred Deer. And if you're familiar with The Lobster, if you liked The Lobster, I think you will also like this. It's a little bit tighter. There are less characters, and it's a little bit... it's a little bit more darkly humorous, I would say, as well. Mm. Colin Farrell plays this surgeon, and he forms this kind of friendship with this young boy who he did an operation on a family member of his, and you discover some very sinister things later on. But wonderful film.
Mm-hmm. Peter.
Also, I just want to say, how could it have been It that made you like Stephen King and not The Dark Tower? The Dark Tower.
The Dark Tower made me not like Stephen King anymore.
Wait a minute. That was this year?
No, it was
What's
never.
What's this Dark Tower you speak of? I don't understand the situation. Anyway.
All right. So my third favorite would be Maudie. I saw it on the bookshelf, and I was considering to put it at number one, but I got some other ones. And yeah, Sally Hawkins, she did such a perfect portrayal of, I did know a tiny bit about the artist beforehand, and she represented it exactly as I expected. I'm an Ethan Hawke man in certain things. He can be Ethan Hawke sometimes, but then he can be
so this is another character. A man crush situation.
No. Oh, no, not with Ethan Hawke. No offense, Hawkster. But he did a perfect portrayal. His character was probably my favorite. And it was real. It was a very real representation of what love was like back then, what females had to deal with their partner, just what the Maritimes was like. I was born in the Maritimes, so it was good to see a glimpse into what the cultures were like there, what the small areas were like. And pretty much the whole film is just between, you know, Maudie and her husband. And it's just because of that, you get so connected to them and relate to their relationship and mm-hmm. really feel true emotions over everything that happens to them.
Yeah, Maudie is a great pick, and a great year for Sally Hawkins. We're talking about great years for people. She's in The Shape of Water, which I haven't had a chance to see yet, unfortunately. But
I hope it gets at least a little minor Academy nomination. At the very least, a little
minor
one.
Well, she's nominated for a Golden Globe.
Yes, she is.
She'll likely be nominated for an Academy.
I think Shape of Water had the most Golden Globes nominations.
Yeah. I think so, too.
They had seven. So, that will be the weirdest thing if Guillermo del Toro wins the Oscar and Sally Hawkins wins Best Actress. Should be very well deserved for either that or Maudie. Again, I haven't seen Shape of Water, so maybe. But I think there will be stiff competition from the lead actress in my number three, which is Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. Mm-hmm. Which is a film that I've returned to and thought a lot about since we first reviewed it. And, it just, it strikes such a chord because it's, you know, I think that a lot of people are hung up on the idea that nothing really changes in it. And, you know, people stay the same and there's really no resolution to the story. And I think if you're focused on that, you're kind of missing the point of it. That, you know, the end resolution where the characters are leaving to take an action, but they are unsure if they're going to take that action when it actually comes time. And considering that throughout this movie you have these people reacting in the worst way possible in every single situation, just to have the chance that maybe they aren't going to react in the worst way possible just this once is change enough. And I find that very powerful. And Frances McDormand is so great in it. Woody Harrelson was great. Sam Rockwell, too, was also a standout. The entire cast was very good. And But I think Frances McDormand towers above everyone, and I think that she will likely get that nomination. I think she will also likely get the win. But we'll see. And, it's a film about tough choices and trying to live with difficult things and how there aren't really no easy answers in life. You know, we don't live in a law and order world where the cops always manage to solve the case. And, sometimes people get away with terrible things and, it's how you're going to deal with that. Oddly enough, when we were talking about the Golden Globes last week, I didn't get a chance to mention this, but Three Billboards was nominated for Best Drama.
Yeah.
Even though it's miles funnier than Get Out.
Well, and Get Out got nominated for the comedy and musical.
Because it's
so funny,
just because,
right?
Jordan Peele directed it. He is not happy about it.
You think?
Yeah.
Okay, so that is our for a 5, 4, and 3 picks. Let's do a quick catch up. Candace, recap your picks so far.
Yeah, so we had The Big Sick at number 5, Thor Ragnarok at number 4, and It as number 3.
Vince?
At my number 5 is James Gray's The Lost City of Z, Denis Villeneuve's Blade Runner 2049 at number 4, and at number 3, Yorgos Lanthimos, The Killing of a Sacred Deer.
Peter?
My 5th was Spider-Man: Homecoming. and then my 2nd was Logan Lucky, and my 3rd, Maudie.
And my 5 through 3 are Logan, Big Sick, and Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. So we are going to be back in a second with our 2 and 1 picks, and maybe some thoughts about the year overall. But first, it was a tragic year, as these years often are, and this next performer here, who we're going to play on the show, he passed away this year. So he did release one final album before he went. He had a very productive year as well. Introduce Yourself by Gord Downie. And this seemed apropos, a better end. So we're going to play that for you and come right back with more of our best of 2017. You're listening to End Credits here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
You got blood on your shirt.
Yeah, I just came from work.
Who was the victim today?
Looks like it's gonna be me.
Want some coffee?
Sure. So I gotta go to the res tomorrow. Figure I'd take Casey by to see your folks.
Something killed a yearling in the pasture behind their house.
Yeah, that's where I'm going.
Don't let Casey out of your sight on the res. Okay.
Well, like I said, I'm gonna leave with your folks. While I scout, you know, it's too cold to drive him through the snow.
You know what I mean.
No.
Yeah.
Face!
Dad!
Come on, bud.
Okay, I'm coming.
Time to go. Whoa. What's your BB gun pointed at right now? Come here. Come down here.
Sorry, Dad.
Hey, what's the rule, bud? Okay, gun's always loaded, even if it ain't. Right? Okay.
And that was a scene from Wind River, and that was the new film by Taylor Sheridan, released earlier this year, starring Jeremy Renner, Elizabeth Olsen, and Graham Greene. That is my number two pick, Wind River. It's a follow-up to, an appropriate follow-up, I think, to Sheridan. Sheridan wrote Hell or High Water last year. Also about crime in a small town, although that was a desert town here. It's in, you know, the mountains of Wyoming, literally the middle of nowhere, and a woman of First Nations ancestry is found dead, frozen in the middle of nowhere by that character, Lambert, played by Jeremy Renner. And Elizabeth Olsen is the FBI agent, American law, I believe. If it's a crime on a First Nations reservation, it's a federal crime that they have to then call the FBI for assistance of. So she's out of her league. She comes from the Las Vegas field office, so she comes out with her, you know, for FBI flak jacket and nothing else. And so she's kind of caught ill-prepared for investigating, you know, something in the deep winter of Wyoming. Although I think someone makes a reference that it's spring at one point, and there's still snow everywhere, and everyone's talking about how it's 20 below. But, you know, I think this movie's a gut punch on a couple of different levels. I think there's maybe particularly more resonance here in Canada, where we are actually trying to deal with the missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls. This kind of deals directly with that, and there's a... I don't know if it's a disclaimer or a tag at the beginning of the film that says it's based on true events. And then there's also the Me Too movement to consider because of the nature of the crime and how it plays out, and how, you know, there are a lot of men in the world who are, you know, being cast into the light of day, who believe that women are exposable there for their pleasure, and that plays very much into what's going on behind the scenes in Wind River. And I just want to say, too, first of all, it's a great, very well shot movie, cinematography wise. Although there's one scene where everybody's kind of running around on snowmobiles, which kind of looks like some kind of winter sports advertisement. It seemed to go on like that. But the cinematography was terrific. Sheridan is such a great writer. And Jeremy Renner, I think this is Jeremy Renner's best since Hurt Locker, his best performance. I think he's been bogged down on a lot of these blockbustery things for a while now, whether that's Mission Impossible or Avengers or something like that. So, you know, it felt like he was using some old acting muscles here, which was really, really great. Yeah, I liked it a lot. It's a very powerful movie.
I also love that movie, and I think they... managed to like bypass the tropes of the, you know, the cop coming into a territory that she's not quite familiar with.
Yeah.
And they turned it into something really nice.
Yeah, there's that part of it, too, where she is Green, but she's also dealing with Graham Green, who plays the reservation police chief. He's, you know, he's seen it all. He's seen, you know, the federales come in mm-hmm. and, you know, basically be dismissive about issues on the reservation. And so he at one point says to her, like, look, I love your passion, but, you know, everybody here is on the same page. We're just not used to, you know, having, you know, the white people care so much. And, mm-hmm. and I did enjoy that, too. It does not play out like you would expect and in terms of any of the characters. But I do want to highlight Renner especially because I think it has been a while since he's done something that's been genuinely challenging mm-hmm. to him. And I think, you know, he found that in Wind River. And I think we saw what made Jeremy Renner so appealing as an actor to begin with, or that he would be hired for all these blockbustery things. I think that's sort of been lost in all the bow and arrow action in the last several years on his part. Anyway, let's go reverse. So, Peter, what's your number two?
Oh, my number two would be Get Out. I saw it one of the first days it came out, and I've been thinking about it since. Mm-hmm. I mentioned the actors' names too much and the directors, but like I love Jeremy Piven, and I love... what was his name? Daniel Kaluuya. I've known him since Skins, and I'm glad that he was in it. I'm glad that he was made the main character. Of course, it scared me, made me laugh.
Is a comedy.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
depending on who you ask.
Yeah, I don't know if Jordan Peele would agree with that. But obviously, it dealt with some racial issues that have been needed to be dealt with in a long time and written and made by the best person for that and starring a great person for that. Surreal, scary aspects about it, too. It makes you think about a lot afterwards, mm-hmm. About race and issues of that nature. It has a good twist near the end. Mm-hmm. It's just all around great. It's like Ex Machina. It's a little kind of bottled in a singular place, but surreal, scary, comedic, and a little bit of romance.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so Get Out, number two.
I actually left the film and told the person that I was seeing the film with, like, wouldn't it have been better if the ending was like this? It turns out I read that he actually did plan to do that ending, but then in light of some of the political stuff that was happening, he changed it to something a little more upbeat, so to speak.
Okay.
So I actually liked it even more as a result of that when I learned that.
So what is your number two?
So my number two was another TIFF film, actually. You can't see me, like, puffing my chest out right now, but, like, I'm doing it so hard right now.
I was TIFF this year.
Yeah, Princess of Wales. So I had seen another film, like a very heavy drama film before this, and I had to book to the Princess of Wales to see this film. I was in no mood to see another, like, very heavy drama film, and I was absolutely rocked by this movie, believe me. The movie is Dee Reese's Mudbound, which is currently streaming on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
And there are so many rich and wonderful themes in this movie. It's really about two guys coming back from World War II and kind of forming a bond as a result of the alienation that they felt. They happen to be men of different race, so there is that kind of element, and the fact that it takes place in the South also gives it that kind of it goes down that avenue as well. Mm-hmm. But it's all handled in such a great way. Dee Reese, I hope gets an Oscar nomination for Best Director. This is again, a movie that I think everyone should see. I'm like being dead serious. Like, people should watch this movie. It's on Netflix right now.
So it's literally not hard to find.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Candace, number two.
My number two film is Get Out.
Get Out.
Sure is Get Out. So I am a huge horror fan, so I was never going to not see this film. It's definitely not a comedy.
It's not a comedy.
It's so not a comedy. It's, I mean, The only thing funny about it are the actual comedic scenes with the one character who's a comedic relief. And that is simply because this film was so well done. There was just this dread the entire time. Some dread from the very true reality of the world that black people in America and Canada, let's not, you know, pat ourselves on the back too much. But the dread that every black person has to go through their day-to-day life with, that we all got to experience while watching it because we could feel it, and then just throw on this sort of weird horror, like literal horror of like there's like this monstery sort of thing. What is going on here? You know, never knowing really what it was. And again, coming back to the sort of very truthful aspect of it is that literally it's just a bunch of white people who think that black people are only good, like that they have zero agency over their own lives and their own bodies, and they just exist to serve white people.
Yeah, they're just being viewed as objects by them.
Yeah. It was exactly the film I think 2017 needed, and the fact that it has been nominated for a comedy, I think, is exactly the thing that 2017 would do to this kind of film.
Yeah. That's a good way of putting it. It
could be different at the Academy Awards, the Oscars, hopefully, but most people do view it as a comedy, and Academy Awards don't really ever nominate them for anything, but I'm hoping.
Well, I think the plus is that the Academy doesn't separate things into comedy and drama. Mm-hmm. Neither did the SAG Awards, for that matter. The Get Out was just nominated straight up for Best Ensemble, and Daniel Kaluuya also Best Actor. And I hope the Academy does remember Get Out at the end of the day, even if the Golden Globes only remember it as a comedy. But I mean, we talked about that last week, that you know, all these issues about the Golden Globes trying to cram as many stars, and I don't think it was a purposeful slight, but maybe that is the point as well, that it was a secondary thought that people who have seen Get Out and like Get Out and appreciate Get Out were not going to appreciate it being stuck into the best comedy or musical category, since it is neither of those things. Anyway, I'm glad this worked out this way, because my number one is Get Out.
Oh, I didn't know.
And it is, the primary reason is because it's like you said, Peter, I can't stop thinking about it. Mm-hmm. It is in the back of my mind whenever I'm thinking about movies from this last year, when I'm thinking about race issues. And I think, as we talked about last week, Candace, the fact that it does make your skin crawl as a white person, and to experience this through a black protagonist and to feel all those things shows you the effectiveness of what Jordan Peele did here. And I hope it doesn't come, like you said, that it's because people know Jordan Peele from Key and Peele. And that's the only reason. Like, Jordan Peele is a comedian, so this must be a comedy. I hope that it isn't that simplistic, because this shows a level of range, an incredible level of range from a first-time filmmaker. And granted, Key and Peele went into a lot of political, racial satire. But this is a whole other level, if not like two or three other levels. It is astounding what he did. That foreboding that you feel, even in moments when you think Bradley Whitford plays Allison Williams' father, and he's talking to Daniel Kaluuya's character, and he's like, oh yeah, I would have voted for Obama a third time. Which, of course, has an immediate strike, because so many people who did vote for Obama twice ended up voting for Trump. And not only that, but that is something like an old white dad would say to his daughter's black boyfriend. And so it's unsettling in that way, but it's also kind of folksy, kind of a thing you would expect a dad to say. And it turns so subtly. And then you bring in, what's his name? Lakeith Stanford in the garden party scene. Mm-hmm. And you start to see where the ribbons are, where the stitches are in this society, and it starts to fall apart. And then it gets to the point where it's revealed what the extent of what's going on. And it's Daniel Kaluuya. He's tied to a chair, and he's watching a monitor of something, talking to somebody who he thought he had made a friend there. Mm-hmm. And when he realizes the full depth of the betrayal and this frankly the sadism of what's going on here and how he has been objectified and is being mm-hmm. created like an object, and the look on his face and the tears strolling down his cheeks, it's so, so powerful. And that's where the movie turns. And it's a smart, you know, the way the movie resolves itself. I think I know where I didn't read where Jordan Peele wanted to take it, but I think I know, because this mm-hmm. this very much reminds me of The Stepford Wives.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so I can imagine the way The Stepford Wives resolves is similar to how Jordan Peele wanted it to resolve initially. But I am glad that he did consider the political landscape. It's like, you know, we need a win, even if it's a fictional win in this fictional movie. You know, we need to kind of see that we can persevere. And, yeah, like I said, it's something that's been on the top of my mind. And really great. Or like maybe one of the best feature directorial debuts ever.
Yeah, the writing especially is so well done. How yeah. There's this great sense of mounting dread, you know what yeah. I mean? First they hit this deer on the way there, and then all of these other little bizarre things start to happen. And again, there's this great performance on Daniel Kaluuya's face where you can kind of read this like discomfort that's going on. And it's just all of those little things end up building up to this amazing kind of climax.
And I don't want to dismiss Allison Williams either. Because after everything's been revealed and she's sort of like picking her next target, as it were, mm-hmm. and there's such an eagerness on her face, like such sadism, and until that point she's kind of like the sweet, kind of innocent girlfriend.
The advocate, really,
and the advocate,
for him,
that's
right.
That's
the betrayal.
I wasn't suspecting anything either.
That was deep. Anyway, Peter, number one.
My number one would be The Big Sick.
Oh, nice.
I'm a comedy guy, and I love Kumail Nanjiani, and it was so real. It was a good representation of what a lot of people wanting to get married to someone of a different culture or religion have to deal with, and it even more so, it showed what stand-up comedians have to deal with, especially in Chicago, and how a lot of the Chicago ones, like current comedian stand-up comedians are from Chicago, and what it's like to head over to New York. There was great cameos like Bo Burnham, people like that. And as someone who's had to have stayed in a hospital for weeks, a month sometimes, I was also able to relate to the main female character, which I think a lot of people would. And Ray Romano. It was great seeing him as something other than an Ice Age, and he was truly
comedic.
It's
not where I thought you were going with that sentence.
And he was truly comedic, and
don't forget Welcome to Mooseport.
Yeah, and the joke that you said that he made, that was also my favorite part by far. Everybody loves him. Everybody loves him, and it was just, I loved the film. Yeah. You guys have already said enough about it. I'm glad that Get Out and It have been talked about by three people. So, yeah. That was my number one.
My joke in The Big Sick is the go back to ISIS and Holly Hunter going, that doesn't even make sense.
Yeah, yeah.
So you want more of them?
That was hilarious the way she turns out. It's like, what are you, a recruiter for ISIS? And it's I love the part where she like goes at him and Ray Romano kind of grabs her in middle air. She is the MVP of that.
Her and Ray Romano, their connection was probably my favorite part of the whole thing.
I haven't seen the film, but now I really want to.
So, Vince, you're number one.
Well, I will just say this. I was very tempted to make my number one something, you know, recognizable, something that was going to be climactic, that people would, you know, know. But unfortunately, I saw the best movie of the year at TIFF, and it was not in English. So the best movie of the year that I saw was an Israeli movie called The Insult. And it has already been shortlisted for the Oscar for Best Foreign Language Film. If there is any justice in this world, it will win the Oscar for Best Foreign Language Film. I'm telling you, this film had the most emotional impact of any film that I've seen all year. I was absolutely floored by this movie. Mm. It is about an Israeli man. I believe it takes place in I'm not sure the city, but it takes place in Israel, and there is an Arabic construction crew, and they need to build a pipeline through this guy's property, and they end up having an argument, and a fight ensues, and the kind of political fallout, I guess, as a result of this fight takes you to places that you could not believe and makes you understand the kind of contemporary politics happening in that area in ways that I could not have been prepared for. So I am urging everybody, if you can, see the insult, please. I believe it will make you a better human being, because I think it made me a better human being seeing that film.
Wow. Okay. Strong endorsement. Candace, you're number one.
Well, it is a movie that people have seen and probably doesn't have as good of a message as that one. So let's just do it. So my number one movie of the year was Baby Driver.
Wow.
Which is problematic now, but let's not go there. But yeah, Baby Driver, Edgar Wright film with the best soundtrack. Not only the best soundtrack, but like a soundtrack that was actually part of the storytelling, which is the only other film I've ever seen like that was American Graffiti, where literally the music happening in that we hear is actually happening in the film as part of the film. It's great. Ansel Elgort?
Elgort.
Yeah, he was great in similar to what you said about Ryan Gosling in 2049, right? He like almost deadpan, very little reaction to everything, but so much depth in his performance of Baby, this, you know, kind of basically just this person going through life with post-traumatic stress disorder, right? Like everything is about this one moment for him. Mm-hmm. And then all the other performers. I mean, John Hamm was great.
Yeah.
And
Jamie Foxx.
Thank you. Jamie Foxx was truly terrifying. Like he was really scary in this film. It was so great. And all of the driving. I mean, I walked out of that film and I was like, first of all, I want to go see the film again, and then I want to go driving, and then I want to buy the film. I skipped the first two options because I couldn't actually do those, and instead I bought the film. Like as soon as I got home, I bought it for pre-order, and then the day that it arrived, I watched it, and then I watched it again really recently because I felt like, can I still watch a Kevin Spacey film? Because this is my favorite film of the year, and I watched it, and I was like, okay, that was okay. Okay, I think I can do this, but it's there's obviously the layers there which are difficult.
Yeah,
yeah, that's a shame that Kevin Spacey can't behave himself so you can still enjoy Kevin Spacey performances. I think Baby Driver was probably on my top 10. Again, it was something that was probably on my top 10 that couldn't make the top 5, but yeah, it was really good. The driving was so solid. I think with a lot of these car driving movies, the focus is on like the action, like the explosion and running people off the road and cool flips and that kind of thing. And I think one of the great things about Baby Driver shows like the actual skill and fidelity of driving. And of course the way it was set to the music too, like motion was very much set to the soundtrack and it was very important as well. And yeah, it was great. And it was great that it was so well received too, that it was a hit. So we have more people discovering Edgar Wright, which is nothing but a good thing. And yeah, it's, you know, despite Kevin Spacey, I think people should still seek it out. It's, you know, I understand that feeling, but you know, I don't think we can let bad people destroy all the good in the world.
I just feel good knowing that he won't continue to get work.
Yeah.
So I don't have to make this decision. Unlike
concluded.
People like Woody Allen and Roman Polanski, where it's like, oh,
yeah.
Now what am
right.
I?
Yeah. Well, it's easier for directors to keep going, right? Because people don't see them, and I don't think that's fair. I don't think that's fair.
That's a good point.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's our top 5. We'll recap in a sec, but let's flip this on its head. Does anyone have like a pick for like the worst of the year?
The worst.
What did you hate? What'd you hate, Vince? What did you hate at TIFF?
What? Yeah, you're going to have to come back. Yeah. We're going to have to cut to a music break and then come back to me. No, the first thing that comes to mind is the Tom Cruise Mummy movie.
Oh, you saw that.
Yeah, surprisingly, yikes. The second thing that comes to mind is the Bill Condon Beauty and the Beast, not because it was bad, but because it was so ho-hum, I feel.
Yeah, way worse than Cinderella, I found.
I've heard a lot of blowback about Beauty and the Beast. I think that's...
It's like all the money and all of the, you know, time and the production and whatever. It's like, that's what you did with it? I don't know. It just wasn't that impressive. Quite frankly, if I had turned down La La Land to do that, which Emma Watson did, I would be kind of bummed.
Well, I'm sure the new story on her house is some comfort.
Yeah,
Her new backyard pool is probably some comfort.
Fine. All right.
One of the things I can't help stop thinking about, speaking of racial things, the Great Wall, where white savior Matt Damon comes to save China from monsters trying to get over the Great Wall.
You think people should forget about that? The Great Wall? I enjoyed it.
It just was everything I thought it was going to be in every horrible way. Okay.
I wasn't expecting much going in, but it was fast-paced, and a lot of fun and action. I think if you're the kind of person who likes Fast and Furious, thriller films, just quick stuff, it's only like 90 minutes, right?
All five of you.
Yeah.
I'm right here. I'm sitting right here, guys.
You know, that is, sorry to cut you off, but you know, I was disappointed by Fate of the Furious as well.
Yes.
I was disappointed
by it. Oh, especially based on like the Fast and the Furious one last year, the seventh one. Yeah, garbage.
Sorry, you were saying.
Well, so I try not to spend money on movies that I think are going to be bad, so it's sort of hard to say, but I feel like of the films that I saw this year, the ones that I will not watch again are Wonder Woman and Alien Covenant.
No,
Alien Covenant was not bad. It was definitely not as bad as Prometheus, but I forgot it even, like when I was looking through trying to remember, like, what did I see this year? I was like, oh yeah, Covenant, that came out.
Yeah. In Beauty and the Beast, everyone's forgotten about them, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, shall we recap our top five?
I just want to quickly say nobody should go and see Geostorm.
that looked amazing.
It was just garbage.
That looked like so much destruction.
Yeah.
Like,
it was, honestly though, I think better of it now. It was garbage. It was fun garbage.
Yeah, I think so. Okay, I didn't even plan it.
You get Great Wall, I'll take Geostorm.
Okay, that's fair. Okay.
All right, Candace, top five.
All right, I've got number five, The Big Sick. Number four, Thor, Ragnarok. Three was It. Number two was Get Out. And my top movie of the year was Baby Driver.
Vince?
Number five was The Lost City of Z. Number four, Blade Runner 2049. Number three, The Killing of a Sacred Deer. Number two, Mudbound. And number one, The Insult.
Peter?
Number five, Spider-Man Homecoming. And then Logan Lucky, number four. Maudie, number three. Get Out, number two. And The Big Sick, number one.
And once again, I had Logan, The Big Sick, Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, Wind River, and Get Out. And that's going to be our best of 2017 show, and we hope you like that. If you want to hear this or other past episodes of End Credits, you can go to our website, endcreditsradioshow.com. We are at End Credits Radio Show on Facebook and End Credits Radio on Twitter. Candace, where can people on the internet find you?
You can find me everywhere at Sin48, that's CINN48.
Vince?
Facebook, Vincent Masson.
Peter?
Twitter or YouTube, Mr. Talarak.
And I am at Anime Donaldson on Twitter and Instagram. You can go to guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca. We will have another episode of Open Sources for you later today at 5, and I believe that is interviews. We have our interview special, Ron James and Amy Goodman, so you can stay tuned for that. We will be back here next Thursday at 10 a.m. for our award show, and you'll be very excited to hear that. I know you will. In the meantime, we will see you next week, and if we don't see you, have a happy new year.